I'd like to welcome Davy Carlin here. This is going to be an interview with Davy, who currently lives in West Belfast. Davy, could you give a brief history of your early childhood, growing up here in the north and growing up in Belfast? Where were you born, etc.?
Well, John, I was born into an estate that is renowned and well known not only around West Belfast or Ireland, but in many parts around the world. It's an estate called Ballymurphy. I was born on the 4th of October 1970 into that estate. I moved into a house in 40 Glenlina Road, which is just your first turn on the left after you go in the entrance on the Springfield Road. Came from a very large extended family. Indeed, around the Murph at that time, there was probably 50 or more who were related to me one way or the other. I was unusual in one way, that I was a black child growing up in an overwhelming white community. I was born into the 70s during the height of the recent Irish War. Indeed, there's been books written about Ballymurphy and the Irish War over those period of times. Experiences for me were varied. Early childhood, really early childhood, I have memories come back really, really young, pre-nursery school. But they were happy, even given the times. I remember, you know, sitting out around the Murph estate, and there was street parties, and people were coming out and playing bingo, and the old games of hopscotch, and you were playing skips, and football, and cribby, and all those type of things, so it was really, really good. And I remember the old Murph, they used to be like what I would call walls, which had holes in them, and used to climb up on the walls, and above many of the houses, there was like a slab of rock above the entrance to the door, and used to climb up the poles and sit on top of the entrance to the door. So it was fun. The amount of days were good, and they were fun. As it progressed, I started to understand that, you know, there was something going on within the area. You seen TV programs of soldiers on the streets and stuff like that there. But when you actually see them walking about your streets carrying guns, you see the armoured cars and tanks. Now, I'm not talking about even in the 90s and stuff. When they were in the 70s, they actually drove around what you call sixers. These are six-wheel tanks. I used to remember the big massive tractors. The sound of them was unbelievable, and they were all camouflaged and all as well. And, you know, even though it was a black kid growing up in the Murph, I never really experienced racism from any really within the community. There was always the inquisitiveness. There was always, you know, the brown boy, you know, why are you covered in chocolate and stuff like that there. So, because I was never treated any differently, I didn't see myself as actually being different. That only started to materialise really whenever the soldiers and the police started to call me racist names.
Was this in Ballymurphy, or
this is in the Murph, or anywhere we used to go? We used to go up the top out of the Murph estate, and you turn left, the shops which are still there at the top of the White Rock. You used to go up to the shops there, and you see the Brits walking across and the peelers at times. And there was a show on at the time called Roots, and they used to say, like, could the Kenty, hey boy, like my boots at times. Even someone tried to put my head down to make them like their boots, you know. So there was that, and because of that, you know, I started to see myself as different. But apart from that, I started to feel hatred towards those people who were doing it to me, even at a very, very early age. And as I started to get older, still 6 or 7 years of age, I would see the forces of the state verbally and physically abusing loved ones, relatives, neighbours within the community. And it has to be said, in them days, you know, people had nothing. They had absolutely nothing, because we were discriminated against by the unionist-dominated state, trying to get jobs, trying to get housing, you know, just complete and utter discrimination of the Catholic people. Although later on in life, I started to realise that within Protestant communities, their social and economic deprivation was nearly as bad as what we were living in. But you didn't know it in them days. You just knew the fact is you had little. But when I say we had little, we had also had everything you had. And I will say this, that even though the days were traumatic and the times were traumatic and brutal, but I'm glad I lived to see what real community spirit's like. If you're talking about a future society, you know, that gave me a glimpse in those early days of what I would like it to be, in the sense that people looked out for each other, they rallied around for each other, they shared what little they had with each other, and it was an amazing experience of a community, of a small society, of a wee world within a world, coming together and giving what little they had to others.
Could you give an example of that? Or
one example I remember, I'll go on this later when I lived down in the Falls. I remember a time when, like, all the doors were left open, by and large. And one of the reasons the doors were left open as well, I believe, is that, you know, when the state was coming in, they were brutalising and beating and shooting people. Then people could run through the houses and out the back, and I did it on many occasions as a child myself, with the soldiers and following me going, get the wee black bastard, the wee black bastard's there, there's the wee nigger and stuff like that. But there were so many wee ways and alleyways in them days, and I think that was one of the reasons why they've restructured the way the houses are being built, closing off alleyways and stuff as well, because they were really utilised by the IRA volunteers within the times, and also utilised by the community themselves. But in regard to one of the situations, I remember a time when they were in the Falls, rats was going on really, really heavily. As I said earlier on, the big tractors were coming up, and this time when they were removing the bonfire wood, and we as kids, you know, were getting wired into them with whatever we had at hand. But there's this one particular guy who was probably 5 years older than me. I would say at that time he was probably about 14, 15. And he was literally in his bare feet. And he had literally rags on him. And I remember the woman, we lived in number 6 of Ostapur Street, the woman directly across from us, Mrs. Murphy, you call her. I remember her coming out and actually giving her a coat that one of her sons actually owned, who I used to knock about with down there. And my own mum gave him her shoes, and someone else gave him trousers. And there was no look down on someone because they needed it. It's because everyone had little, but what little had to give, as I said before. Then there was other times I remember in our house in Sebastopol Street when those people...
Is this when you move? You move from the Balmurphy to Falls, aye?
Yeah, I'll go back to Balmurphy in a minute, but in regard to different experiences of community solidarity, there was times also whenever people who had completely nothing came from the streets, who were living in the streets. I remember a time in Sebastopol Street we had a wee pineapple full of coppers, and my mum would always keep it for people come along and give them the money, even though we had very, very, very little, you know. But in regard to the Murph, as I said, you know, I started feeling different, I started being treated different by the forces of the state and stuff as well. But then when you actually witness the brutality of the state, I witnessed women getting their teeth smashed out by bayonets of guns. I witnessed dogs who used to bark at the street, bark at the soldiers. And, you know, I even heard years down the line, you know, that some dog was even buried in its full colours. Do you know what I mean? Because whether that's true, I don't know. But the dogs were like a warning signal when the state came in. But I witnessed the brutality of the state there, you know. And when you actually see it firsthand, right? When you see people you love being battered, abused, and beaten off the streets, then you can only take so much. You really can only take so much. And this is in tandem with the racist abuse that I was given, and even the beatings, even at an early age. you know, by grown soldiers. You know, what I had was a childhood which had nothing, but I was a fun-loving kid. I was a really fun-loving kid. I liked life, you know. I just was a nice kid, you know what I mean? But then, because of that, then it started slowly to turn towards hatred. And, you know, I actually seen myself physically change. I could see my face, I could see my eyes changing to a fun-loving spark of a kid in youth to just complete nothing. It was nothing to start. So those actions drove a reaction into me. And even at a very young age, 7 or so, it forced me to do what I could to fight back against the state. And I can fully understand the political circumstances that driven young men and young women into the ranks of those who could provide the means and direction to head back at the state. Because my own feelings of immense hatred and let's get back at the bastards at a 7-year-old kid, if they were intensified to a 17-year-old kid, then I can fully understand why people took up the gun. I may necessarily agree with it, as that's why I'm in the organisation I am now, but I can fully understand it. And there was many innocent killed by many sides during the period of the war. So Ballymurphy to me was an experience of where I first had an innocent childhood, where I can remember that sparkle of eye, where I can remember the kids' games, where I can remember being a child. But it's also because I used to go between my grandmother's house and then we moved to Sebastopol Street. It was also where...
What age did you move to Sebastopol Street at?
Well, we moved there probably about in the mid-70s, I would say. 74, 75. Well, I did anyway. I went from living with my grandmother. When I left my grandmother's house, you know, because I was living with my grandmother, my mother had remarried. She got married in Corpus Christi to my stepfather, who was also from the Ballymurphy estate. I was married by the famous priest, Father Dallas Wilson. I have a wee picture of my staff standing there in a wee white shirt and a wee shorts, about 3 years of age or so. So moved down to Sylvester Street. And so to give them a breathing space, to get together and to begin their life together and to get the home sorted out, that I lived with my granny most of the time. And then over the years, I went from my grandmother's house to my own house, family home, and then stayed with my grandmother at the weekends. So that's the way it operated for a couple of years. It was actually when we moved to Sebastopol Street, and I found out years later that the house that we actually got had belonged to Seamus Twomey, which was the IRA's chief of staff, I think at that period of time. So we had got that house there. So moved in there about the mid-70s.
What about education, etc.? What school did you go to?
Well, I started school in a really good school. It was very strict, which was just around the corner from me in Sebastopol Street. It was called St. Finian's. I think it's in a further education centre now. And beside, a couple of doors down from our street, it was the Sinn Féin Centre, where you'd seen, the early 80s when Gerry Adams won his first seat as MP, him standing out on the balcony, you know, waving to the people there. There was a Sinn Féin Centre. I remember there was next door, I think it may have been on that, but there was machines used to play all the time, you know, the money machines and stuff. And I remember putting money in and just kept winning when I knew where it was coming from, putting it in my pockets and run. Jesus, I'm a millionaire. It was about £3 or something. Do you know what I mean? But I went to St. Finian's School in on the Falls Road, and it was taught by Christian Brothers. There was teachers, I still remember teachers, Miss O'Halloran, Mrs. Milani. But then we got taught by Brother Christopher, and he was really into Gaelic football and the Gaelic games and stuff. They were very, very strict. In them days, you know, if you did wrong, you know, I remember occasions where you were slapped in the hands, or occasions where you're bent on the desk, your kicks are pulled down, you're whipped by meter sticks and spit by meter sticks and all. That was the reality at the time. They didn't think nothing about lifting you by the earlugs or the lock of hair behind your ear, giving you a slap around the head. That was the reality of the time. But even at a very young age, I have to say, I was involved, I was really interested in sport. And I remember going up playing sport, I think it was Beachmere Legends Tennis there, playing Gaelic and stuff like that there. You know, and there was one particular moment I really remember in them days was, I was meant to play a Gaelic final, and was still a child. And for the first time I got on to a roundabout owned by a guy called Mickey Marley. And I was on his roundabout and I was sick as a dog, and I couldn't play the Gaelic final. So it's wee memories like that, you know, that keep coming to the fore every now and again. But in regard to, as I was saying, of, you know, being driven to react, you know, what happened when I lived there, it was again, it was a centre of everything. You know, you remember, you know, the riding, you remember the bonfires, you remember the big tractors, you remember the Brits, you remember the Peters, you've seen people shot, you've seen people beaten, you've seen people brutalised, you know, all those different things you actually seen. And so eventually it did drive a reaction into me. And I remember when that reaction happened, I actually started visibly to see the change in my eyes from the sparkle gone to absolute nothing. And I walked out the door of my house in 6th of Oxford Street and I started picking up bricks. And there was very little balls of it because they were all been thrown and broken. But I think I found one or two. And it was then that I started getting wired into the Brits in them days.
So early teenage years, aye?
No, this is still 7, 8, 9 years of age. Aye. Getting wired into the Brits. And, you know, in that street as well, again, the spirit, the community spirit was unreal. Although I have to say, I started to realise that there was different Republican organisations. Whereas before, I just really knew of the provisionals. Then I started to realise there was different organisations, you know. And when you think of in context today, like I remember, again, I'm a child just sitting, eating a lollipop, watching IRA volunteers training, men and women, just openly training in the streets. I remember, you know, volunteers, you know, coming and going, and all the faces are long gone now, but I remember, you know, them coming and going and getting wired in and stuff as well. So I remember all those things, you know, and then I got to a stage where, you know, it was just regular getting wired into the state, you know, fighting against the state, you know, whatever a child could do, he did, you know what I mean? And there was many times that I got to try and get away from it into the Falls Library to read. I enjoyed reading, even though I still had made dyslexia. I liked reading. I went to the Falls Swimmers. I went to a youth club called St. Augustine's Youth Club, which is next to the Falls Library. I think it's a dole thing now, an employment thing now. And I remember the times of standing on top of the Library. You know, the kid with the wee balaclava on, he used to have these wee binoculars just standing there waiting, because they used to come out of a street the way down the falls, but you see them coming up, you know what I mean? And then hidden was the armoury. I and others from adjacent streets were going to use, and they come up and you just get wired in them. And when I'm talking about kids getting wired in them, I'm talking about kids, right, who had no fear. I'm talking about the fucking tanks, I'm getting them to show you, tanks used to come up and the kids used to just grab whatever they can and go right up to them. And the older kids were no big beer barrel things, and just bang them off. Other kids would jump and tap them, were big poles, trying to get at the mirrors or whatever they had. There was no fear, they're just sheer passion of them and of the kids wanting to get into them was unbelievable. So if that passion was there as kids, imagine the passion of the older teenagers and other volunteers.
I take it this time you became more politically conscious as a Republican?
Well, I didn't know what Republicanism was. All I knew was there was these people who were brutalising me and my people, which I seen my people at the time, and I still see myself, no matter what my political party, I still see myself as part of a community that I grew up in, but my politics have moved to understanding it on the basis of class. But in them days, I didn't know what republicanism was. All I knew was these people were calling me a nigger. Mm. They were beating my relatives. They were shooting dead people who I knew. And I wanted to defend.